could it be a new trial for former Congresswoman Corrine Brown? Why do some city council representatives want to punt on their role and put the gas tax idea to you, the voters? And what's up with housing prices in our area going through the roof? Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, all of the top stories of the week with our Friday roundtable already getting your calls. Join us. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, it's a look ahead to the Southern Drifter Music Festival on Jekyll Island. But first, it's Friday, and here to discuss a busy week in the news, we welcome Emily Block of the Florida Times Union. Hey, Emily.
Good morning.
John Burr, North Florida correspondent for The Invading Sea, back with us. Hi, John.
Hey, good morning, Melissa.
Writer, columnist Shelton Hull. Good morning, Shelton.
Good morning.
And new to the panel, Bob Longo, general manager at Action News Jax. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Melissa. Good morning.
Good to have all four of you with us. Lots to talk about from the week, and we will go to your calls in a moment. The number to join the show, 549-2937. Emails to First Coast Connect at WJCT.org. Tweets to at Melissa in Jax, and our Facebook page is open. Lots of news happened, but we're going to begin with an extraordinary story that broke yesterday. Former U.S. Representative Corrine Brown's fraud convictions were overturned Thursday by a federal appeals court, and they've ordered a new trial, citing judicial error. Now, the 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals said a judge's decision during Brown's 2017 trial to remove a juror who said that the Holy Spirit had told him Brown was innocent invalidated the whole trial's result. Seven judges joined in this finding from a rare en banc review by the entire appellate bench. Four others dissented, but here's the bottom line. Prosecutors will have to now decide whether to retry Corrine Brown, a 12-term member of the U.S. House of Representatives from Jacksonville and a very well-known political figure from this area. She lost re-election after being indicted in 2016 on a string of charges centered around misuse of money from a sham children's charity. Brown was convicted in May 2017 on 18 counts, including conspiracy, mail and wire fraud, and tax charges. Let us know your thoughts about this. 549-2937. I want to begin with you, John Burr, because out of all of us here on the show today, you probably had the longest tenure of covering Congresswoman Brown. She did serve time for these convictions. This is pretty extraordinary. What are your initial thoughts?
Well, my initial thought is complete surprise. It seemed like Judge Corrigan's decision to excuse that juror at the time was valid, but apparently the appeals court disagrees. The question now is, will the federal prosecutors consider it worth their time to re-prosecute Corrine Brown? She's been in prison now, 2-3 years. Mm-hmm. And they might decide, well, that's punishment enough, and we've got other things to move on to. Who knows?
Yeah. This will be fascinating to watch. Corrine Brown, of course, always maintained her innocence. Emily Block, Florida Times Union. Corrine Brown was also known during her tenure in Congress for her slogan was Corrine Delivers, for bringing pork to this district and having a lot of influence on Capitol Hill. Her seat was redrawn. It's now held by Democrat Al Lawson. But this is sort of a coda to her long story in Northeast Florida politics that I think took a lot of people by surprise.
Yeah, I mean, this is pretty remarkable, especially, I'm a newcomer to Jacksonville. I moved here in 2019. And her story, it's always been almost like this lore of Jacksonville.
Right.
You know, my colleague Nate Monroe and my former colleague Chris Hong, they covered this story very thoroughly. You know, they were in D.C. during the trials, and like it's just been always this story by the time I moved here of all the things, all the chapters to this novel, so it's pretty remarkable seeing it all come back now.
Yeah, Shelton Hull, the charges were related to her role in using contributions for a charity she had set up called One Door for Education. The allegations was that were that it was a slush fund, that she used those funds for personal expenses and events. Brown's defenders said that she was not being well served by people around her that misused the money.
It's probably a little bit in between. Let me say, full disclosure, I've known Corrine personally for over 30 years, and Ronnie Simmons, her chief of staff, who also went into the pokey alongside her, is a cousin of mine. But that said, I wasn't surprised at all by the appellate court decision. Once that juror was thrown out during the trial, it was immediately speculated that that would be cause for appeal down the line. I'd be very surprised if the prosecutors decide to go after it again, especially federal prosecutors here in the state of Florida, given how much stuff is on their docket, how many other things they have to do right now. If they were to invest time and resources in putting this old lady back in prison again, it would represent kind of a dereliction of duty, I think, especially in the black community. As far as the charges against her, I would say, and this may be a controversial point, but in my opinion, all campaign finance is glorified money laundering. What she was accused of doing with this this charitable organization, you could run up the same type of charges on almost any other nonprofit making any kind of serious money in the state of Florida, especially anything connected to a politician. If you've got a nonprofit organization that has a sitting politician on the board, you are already vulnerable to potential federal charges. And I guarantee you that you'll see more activity of that type as we move down towards the summer, especially into the campaign season next year. The only way they were able to get her out of that spot was by out of her congressional spot was by indicting her. And there will probably be one or two other people downstate that catch similar charges, I'd say, in the next 6 months or so.
We need to note that Brown was released from prison last spring, about a year ago. She served less than half of her 5-year sentence. Her attorney convinced the court, Bob Longo, that she was especially vulnerable to coronavirus. So she's watching this play out from here in Jacksonville. She left jail to be, or prison to be, with her family members. It's fascinating, too, to see how a technicality can overturn a high-profile conviction like this. Bob Longo, your thoughts.
Yeah, well, hey, Shelton raises a lot of great points. I agree with most of them. You know, I think what you have here also, you know, when that happened in court back in 2017-18, all the experts, quote-unquote, said that this is going to expose this to being tossed out at some point. And here we are years later, and that's happened. In between then, she's been in jail. But she has maintained, I would argue, a pretty good base of power and lobbying. And you know, if Joe Smith on the street had a similar charge, would he or she be able to, years later, afford the kind of legal financing required to get this thing pushed to an appellate and then get tossed out? Probably not. But she has those connections. She knows those people. She has that support from her backers in the community. And there's a lot of people who think that she was wrongfully accused and convicted. So, you know, she had her day in court twice now, it appears. And you know, she's an elderly woman, a former stateswoman. And you know, I think it would be, they'd be hard-pressed to try her again. It would be bad publicity, right? And so for that and the expense, I think we've probably seen the last of this.
Let's go to your calls. If you're just hearing about this here on our Friday roundtable, we're talking about the fraud convictions for former U.S. Representative Corrine Brown being overturned yesterday by a federal appeals court, 549-2937. Giorgio is on the line. Giorgio, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. I miss you.
And is this Giorgio, former editor at Folio Weekly, on the phone?
It most certainly is.
Good morning. Go ahead.
You know what? I was rapping with Shelton earlier. I thought it'd be fun to call in and say hi to everyone. I miss you guys. I'm still out here in Athens, Greece.
Oh, wow. You're calling all the way from Greece. That's amazing.
I am. This is the miracle of modern technology.
Okay. Well, what are your thoughts about this story?
Well, I'm not paying attention to the hyper-local these days. I'm paying attention to state news and national news and international news. So I won't be able to opine in depth.
Well, it's good to hear your voice. Thanks for calling. Let's take a few more calls about this before we do move on to a few other stories. Linda in Mandarin. Hi, Linda. Good morning to you.
Good morning. I am happy that Corrine has been given a reprieve, because she did serve time in prison, people. And for the guy who said, oh, she has all these connections, you know, Corrine, you know, had other properties that she sold. It wasn't like she had a slush fund of legal defense. Yes, she has a lot of connections. But look at the former governor, I think it was in Virginia, that went to the Supreme Court and, you know, got that thrown out. He got Rolex from donors. So things do happen. It rarely happens like this. I think that the things that they wanted to happen to get her out of Congress happened. And so now let's
You think people were trying to get her out of Congress. Why do you think that?
Yeah. That is a widely thought of thought process in the African-American community. You know, Corrine was one of those people that Corrine delivers. She delivered the $300 million to build a courthouse she was convicted in. But many people had angst with her locally if she would just, I guess they thought she should just stop talking and bring the pork back. So there are a lot of people, let's call that a conspiracy theory, but a lot of people think that a focus, because if you would look at it, you would think that nobody has crime in Jacksonville except Black Democrats. And we know that's not true. But look at the number of Black Democrats that have been convicted of crime. So that would lead
you mean local politicians?
Local politicians, yes. So I'm saying if you look at the former governor of Virginia and what he was accused of, and he admitted he took money from a donor, a wedding for his daughter, a Rolex watch. They went to the Supreme Court. They overturned his conviction, and he never even went to jail because they said that was just part of politics. That compared to $800,000, whatever, if that's true, which we have deniability because the person who was the head of the nonprofit, who actually supposedly had the nonprofit registered at a home address, never even got indicted or served any time or even on probation, is my understanding. So there is another side. Remember
okay.
How we like to do two-sidism? There are always two sides out in the community of what we think happened. And for that juror to be disqualified when he said he could discharge his duties because he said the Holy Spirit, well, you know, a lot of Christians and evangelicals talk about the Holy Spirit all the time, and that doesn't hurt them. So I think, praise God, the Holy Spirit came through.
All right. Thanks, Linda. John Burr, that reflects the sentiments, what she said of a lot of people in this community, although it is divisive, certainly, who are on Corrine Brown's side. They think she was unfairly prosecuted.
Yeah, well, you know, I think the caller makes a good point about the skew of local prosecutions against politicians being against Black politicians. It's certainly true. And I think you'd be very naive to think that it's just Black politicians who may be skirting the law. Certainly, I think that's a valid point. I tend to, I'm kind of old school here. I tend to side with what a jury decides, and except for the juror in question who called upon the Holy Spirit, the other jurors and the jurors who actually made the decision unanimously found her guilty. So I tend to go with what the jury said, but there are bigger questions raised by this whole situation, mm-hmm. No question.
Susan in Mandarin. Hey, Susan, good morning. Happy Friday to you.
Yes, a friend of mine was on the jury, and he said that the evidence was overwhelming, and he also said the juror said that he wasn't going to consider the evidence because God told him that Corrine Brown was innocent. So I don't think it was that he was praying and asking for guidance. I think it was that he said that an invisible force had given him information aside from the evidence. And I agree with what other people seem to be saying, is that we shouldn't let some people off and not prosecute other people, because I have read in the news that Trump has done similar things to what Corrine Brown was accused of. So I don't think we should let people off. We should be prosecuting all politicians similarly. And I also wonder about Mayor Curry, when he's taken gifts through his political action committees from lobbyists. Why is that not being investigated? Okay, thank you. I mean, I think Corrine Brown did a lot of great things for the city, as did Huey Long did some great things for Louisiana, but, you know, the law is the law.
Susan, thanks for those thoughts. And if you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Roundtable, 549-2937. We're going to move on now from the Corrine Brown news and talk about a lot of other news from the week, including the fact that a number of mayors around Florida have expressed concern this week after Governor Ron DeSantis says he's going to lift all remaining COVID restrictions statewide by July 1st. The governor says he's basing this on the science. He says the abundant supply of vaccines means that we should move on from the pandemic. That said, mayors of many large Florida cities, Orlando, Tampa, Miami, although not here in Jacksonville, have criticized the move. Emily Block, they're saying that they should have local control over whether to keep mass mandates in place, and that virulent strains of the virus, deadly variants, are still very active in Florida. And that they believe that the governor is doing this for political reasons based on, you know, his widely perceived ambition that he plans to run for president in a couple of years. Now, we need to be clear, this doesn't really apply in Jacksonville because we don't have any mask order here anymore. What are you hearing about this, Emily, from people who've been following this back and forth?
Sure, Melissa. So as you said, it's a lot of mayors and government officials in general, politicians are expressing that this does feel like overreach, that what is the point of local municipalities if the state governor is going to do a blanket order? You know, of course, as you noted, in Jacksonville, this doesn't really change much. We don't have a mask ordinance anymore and haven't for some time. But that doesn't mean COVID is necessarily gone. You know, in Duval or in Jacksonville, there were 135 new cases yesterday. There's a 7-day average of 148 new cases. Mm-hmm. And of course, waning, you know, drop off in interest in the vaccine. And the more that happens, the more there's concern that mutations and variants that are even more dangerous than the original can continue sprouting up. So then this onus is put on business owners and restaurants and places that are, you know, doing their own enforcement. And they don't have a backup. They don't have a blanket law that they could say, well, if you don't like it here, this is what the law says. Like, now it's on them.
Yeah. Thanks for that, Emily. You know, when you talk to local business owners, many of them, restaurant owners in particular, say they appreciate the opening up of the state. Parents might say they appreciate the fact that kids have been kept in school. So there are plenty of Floridians out there that like what the governor's doing. That said, when he passed a law prohibiting so-called vaccine passports, that's getting pushback. We need to point this out. The CEO of Norwegian Cruise Lines, that's the third largest cruise company, they said Thursday that they may take Florida departures elsewhere because the governor has banned any business from asking whether employees or customers have been vaccinated against COVID-19. Shelton Hull, what about that?
Well, it's rare to see Republicans defer to science in any case, unless you're talking about eugenics or phrenology or the bell curve or something like this. This situation, as far as lifting the different mandates on the COVID thing, it's very difficult. When you look at restaurants, clubs, movie theaters, schools, etc., the festival circuit. These are all mostly liberals. These are all mostly Democratic voters who would stand to suffer the most. So it doesn't really matter that much what they think. They're being, between that and the new voting restrictions that he signed in, he's catching a lot of lawsuits, and I would expect lawsuits related to the COVID stuff. Jane Castor, the mayor of Tampa, is a very potent force as someone who might come and run against Mr. DeSantis in 2022. You know, when you have a cornered animal, he fights much more viciously, and he knows that the Democrats are coming in hard for him in 2022. They're going to have major support from the White House on down. He's got four or five people already lined up to run against him. And what he's effectively done with this COVID, these new COVID mandates, is every mayor in Florida's political career ended this week. Because if the numbers go back up, it's not going to go on DeSantis. It's going to go on the individual mayors. He'll say, oh, it's this mayor's fault. You know, it's Miami's fault. It's Tampa's fault. It's Orlando's fault. It's Jacksonville's fault. I'm surprised that Lenny Curry was silent about it, because these rules that he put through, you know, it kind of plays the punk card. It's kind of DeSantis saying, you people don't have authority to run your own cities. I will take control. I will tell you what to do. And not everyone likes being pushed around like that.
Well, we do need to note, you know, Mary Curry is, of course, a Republican, one of the only big city Republican mayors in Florida. Mayor Suarez down in Miami, he's a Republican. He has been critical of the governor's pandemic response. You know, Bob Longo, a lot of these mayors feel that they did all of the heavy lifting in keeping Floridians safe during the pandemic, doing rolling shutdowns, doing mass mandates, shutting down venues. They, from their perspective, feel that the numbers in Florida have been not horrible, at least lately, because of the actions they took. That said, when you talk to just regular people around the state, there's a lot of support for the governor's moves. They like the fact that Florida is open. It's a divisive issue.
It's divisive. It's political. It's been political from the start. It's, you know, the science has been, you know, talked about on both sides differently, and it, you know, it's been made muddy and murky, and you know, I think that gives a lot of people cover. It's interesting, my opinion, is that, you know, Governor DeSantis is, you know, he's now guilty of the same overreach that he and others have accused people like in Democratic states of overreaching when they put mask mandates in place. You know, there's this push to go back to normal. I mean, there is not going to be an old normal new again. We're in the COVID world. It's out there. It's part of science. It's part of reality. And there's going to have to be some kind of new reality, some new normal. And you know, smart science says that you should protect yourself against this. There ought to be some way to mix that with some smart business practices. I was in a bunch of businesses this week that still have mask mandates on their front doors, and people wear their masks, they go in, and they're fine. Business goes on as usual. So, you know, there's got to be some kind of middle road, some kind of reality, some kind of common sense science adaptation by politicians. But, you know, it doesn't play to their base. It doesn't play to getting votes. And you've got a governor now who's firmly entrenched. He's up for re-election. He's being talked about on a national platform. You know, yesterday's bill signing was an exclusive Fox News event. I mean, those are things that are political. They're not science-based. And I think ultimately they don't take the health and well-being of the residents of the state in hand.
It will be interesting, John Burr, to see what happens this summer if some businesses are still insisting on masks and their customers point out the fact that the governor has ended all of these restrictions. I do believe, though, there is a carve-out for businesses to keep their protocols going. So we do need to note that. And as of yet, it's not going to affect what schools are doing.
Yeah, that's right. And I, you know, going back to what Bob said, he made an excellent point. You know, I think we got to look at the governor's actions on COVID and also on these voter suppression laws that he signed through the lens of his larger ambition, which is to run for president. He's In the last month, he's been touted as an early front runner in the GOP field. He is squarely in the Trump camp. He is using the Trump playbook religiously. And for Florida, he probably thinks that's not bad politics, since the former president won the state by 3 percentage points. So you got to look at where Governor DeSantis thinks he's headed or wants to be headed, and that's squarely to the White House.
I think that's a smart take. And if you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable with John Burr, Shelton Hall, Bob Longo, Emily Block, and yours truly. As we talk about the biggest stories of the week, people are waiting on hold to talk about a big local story. So we're going to move on and talk about the gas tax right now. The number to join the show is 549-2937. Let's talk about this. Emily, some members of the city council now say the voters should decide on whether to raise Jacksonville Duval County's gas tax by 6 cents a gallon. This is proposed as a way to pay for a slew of infrastructure improvements, and more controversially, it could pay for overhauling the downtown Skyway. Critics of this move by some council members say they're just cowards and abdicating their fundamental role as legislators to decide these basic matters. That is the most basic responsibility they have, deciding how to spend the public's money. And so what about this idea that the gas tax should go to a referendum, some of them say?
Well, you know, Melissa, now we want a referendum.
Right.
It's funny to me as someone who, for pretty much my entire time in Jacksonville, has been covering the school sales tax referendum and all of the pushback that city council, you know, and others gave that sales tax referendum for over a year, pushing it to court. So it's funny that now it's just like such an easy, oh, well, what about a referendum? And to my understanding, you know, David Bauerlein at the Times Union has been covering this pretty thoroughly. But I think this is the first time that city council members had said, why don't we do a referendum as like the first option? So it is fascinating.
549-2937. Mark on the west side. Hi, Mark. Good morning.
Good morning. I think it's a great idea, other than that, mainly because I wanted to set a precedent, because this is going to be small potatoes when Shad Khan comes begging for $1 billion of our taxpayer money. I would love that to be a referendum, because I have a feeling that most of the citizens of Jacksonville would vote no one gets that. But I'm concerned about every time you hear about the gas tax, you don't hear that, 60% of that gas tax will go for the Skyway.
No, it's not. It's about a third, roughly. It's not 60%, but go ahead, Mark.
But a large portion of it will go for the Skyway, which, again, the vast majority of Jacksonville doesn't and won't use. And, you know, they talk about jobs and they're temporary and they're probably going to be out of state jobs anyway. But, I'd say absolutely let us vote on it. And,
a no vote?
I'd absolutely be a no vote. And also I'd be a no vote on Shad Khan getting 1 cent more taxpayer dollars from us for his stadium. So, let us vote.
Thank you, Mark. Shelton Hall, if this went to the voters, I really don't know if it would pass. I don't think it's likely to go to the voters, but I think that certainly some of the public officials that would like to put it to the voters, they don't want to be tagged with the moniker of raising people's taxes. I think that's pretty obvious.
Yeah, some of these guys have already declared that some of these councilmen have already declared that they're running for mayor, and others may run for mayor again. Some of them may be going for the state house in 2022 and beyond. And if you get tagged with voting in favor of raising taxes in a conservative area like this, you're pretty much doomed as a political aspirant, shall we say. Let's note that with this gas tax, a lot of this tax would factor into people that aren't even necessarily citizens of Jacksonville. They're coming in from other counties, coming in to work. You know, it's odd the way we love to throw each other under the bus here in Jacksonville. You would think we'd be more in favor of public transportation, more buses, right, to throw each other under. if the council would, I think the council would vote in favor of it. I think if the referendum, if it went to the voters would probably vote no on it. But then we want this infrastructure, this plan to expand the Skyway into the Brooklyn Riverside area is a great thing for that area. The, you know, septic tank improvements out on the north side, you know, you've got major
roads that still have
potholes.
Yeah.
So it's like we talk about business growth and stuff. It's the old, you know, it's like Corrine used to say, you got to spend money to make money. And it's true, right? It's true right here. I can see the case on either side of it. But as some personally, as someone that has never owned a car, I don't care one way or another about the gas tax. I'm in favor of the infrastructure improvements, and I'm in favor of spending whatever money is necessary to improve the quality of life for our citizens.
549-2937. Give us a call. CJ in Mandarin. Hey, CJ, go ahead.
Hey, good morning. I would also like to voice support for a referendum on this gas tax. I mean, this is a monumental decision, and the people are the ones going to be paying it. So I do think that it should end up going to the people. I know we have a representative type of government. However, I think this is something monumental. I think there's also a few...
Why do you think it's monumental? Why do you think it's monumental?
Okay, so, well, first off, I mean, this is going to attack people's pocketbooks and the ability to have transportation around town. So gas prices are already high. They're only going to get higher. And this really is a short-term type of a tax because we're going electric. I mean, all the major car companies are signed on to go electric in the next 5 to 10 years. And then the big point.
Well, and I think you're absolutely right about that. But that said, there still will be many people driving old-fashioned petrol cars for a long time.
We desperately need infrastructure, and it's really important. We just need to get creative in how we raise revenue. But getting back to my one point, the biggest elephant in the room is Lenny Curry, because we're still in the midst of a grand jury investigation. We still haven't had the full accounting of exactly what happened, what the mayor's office involvement in this privatization of our crown jewel of public utility. And I don't think that we should entrust billions and billions and billions of dollars to be directed and majorly influenced by the Curry administration until we know exactly what's going on. So if we bring it to a referendum, it at least buys us time to be able to understand Mayor Curry's involvement in the JEA scandal. And I don't think we should entrust billions of dollars to Mayor Curry.
Well, it wouldn't be billions and billions. But CJ, I appreciate your point. Thank you for that. Okay, Bob Longo, a lot in his call, including the point that many see this tax as a regressive tax, since lower income people would be affected. It would be spread to people coming in from out of town. That's the other side of that. And then getting back to what we were talking about earlier, the take that many have around federal prosecutors in this district, they perceive that they're more likely to go after a Black Democratic official than a white Republican official. The cynical take is that nobody at City Hall will face indictments over the JEA affair, although I think it's fair to expect maybe some former executives of the utility to be indicted. And yeah. So what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, all good points. That last caller, I mean, really was saying there's a big problem with trust and transparency, right? Like more information is what's needed, I believe, and more working together. No major metropolitan city in the country that we look to as a place that's a shining example of what a big city ought to be for its residents gets that place without struggle, without taxes, without infrastructure, without building things, and without politicians working together with business leaders in a non-combative way with a mutual goal. And I think that's what's been missing personally in the last couple of years. I think a lot of these ideas are good ones. You know, you've got this Skyway, which was not ill-conceived, but it just didn't pan out because history moved the people away from where they built this thing out of cement and steel. And now there's a plan, that a very thoughtful plan, to make it useful again. Instead of wasting $100 million-plus to tear it down, to actually sink more money into it and make it more accessible to more people in the city. That's a good thing on the face of it. Building the infrastructure in the north and western parts of the city. Man, that was a promise from 50 years ago. That ought to be paid up. And who lives in a major metropolitan city anywhere else in the country that has a septic tank in their backyard? I know no other place in America where that happens. So if we are, in fact, the bold city of the South, then the politicians need to work together with the business community and get voters to understand that this kind of stuff pays for things that make our lives better and enriched and bring in more jobs and more taxes and more money for all of us. And I think that's the missing piece. The communication, the marketing, the transparency has been lacking. And I think that's a big trust problem. So people just automatically line up against it.
That is such an important point. This whole notion of improving the Skyway and the gas tax overall, I think that there is a lot of public skepticism, and the Skyway piece in particular could benefit from a marketing push because that's the most controversial part of it. Here's a tweet from a listener. Most good things in society would not happen if they were put to a referendum today. If you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. We're going to talk about the other big story that caught our eye this week. If you are planning to sell a home right now, you are in the catbird seat. When we here at WJCT News put out a call this week for your stories about buying, selling, or renting homes in one of the hottest housing markets in recent memory, we were completely overwhelmed with your responses. People saying that they were desperate to buy a home and having to bid way above the asking price. Homes going so fast they weren't able to even get in on time. There are a lot of factors to this, John Burr. And give us a call, everybody, about your experiences at 549-2937. The market is so hot. Interest rates are so low, John. Investors are snapping up homes. And there's just not a lot of inventory. So if you're trying to sell and you have somewhere good to go after you sell, you are a very lucky American right now. But if you don't have a place to go to, you might be considering selling, but you can't.
Well, you know, that's the other side of the coin here. Is
yeah.
It's a great time to sell, but then when it comes to if you want to buy a house in Jacksonville, you're kind of out of luck. So. But, you know, this market trend, which is playing out really across the country, but probably more so in Florida than anywhere else, it looks like this market trend is going to continue for a while. There's the Federal Reserve is going to keep interest rates low for a couple of years. People from New York and California and New Jersey and all these places can sell their kind of average suburban houses for over $1 million and move to Jacksonville and live very, very well.
Right.
And they've figured that out and they are doing it.
And in this pandemic, people can come down here and work remotely. We were recently named one of the top cities in the country, if not the top city, for digital nomads. Mike in Mandarin. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how are you?
Great, thanks. So have you sold your home? Is that what happened with your household? What's going on?
Yeah, we put our house on the market, and it took about 4 days.
4 days?
4 days.
Did you sell it at above the asking price?
We didn't even have to ask above market price. It was offered right off the bat. People were coming in, already offering and willing to go above other offers to a certain amount, and it took no time at all.
Wow. Well, congrats. And where are you going now?
Moving up to the cold, back to Massachusetts.
Moving back up to the cold, but you've got a nice profit to buy something up there, though, right?
Yes. Well, we're going to be renting, but that was even a challenge. You know, we were able to find a place in the town that we really were looking at. But it took some work, and we found a place, but we're looking forward to it. And, you know, I mean, on the flip side, we are kind of waiting, too, because I'm really sure that the market is going to change eventually. So for people who are having a tough time, I would say just kind of wait. You know, it's going to change. I guarantee it.
Yeah, what goes up must come down. That's right.
Just my quick comment I want to make, though, I know, you know, people are asking, getting above market price sometimes, but, you know, people got to be aware of, you know, when they do the appraisal, you know, if you're asking for $400,000, your house appraises for less, it's a whole different ball game, and, you know, so
sure.
While some people are getting what they want, sometimes it's not always true, but right now it's the sellers are getting what they want. We got what we want, and we're glad to give someone a nice home, too. You know, we loved our house, and we hope they love it as much as we did.
Well, congrats, Mike, and best wishes. And I love the way you say market, too. That's like, I love your accent.
It's like parking the car.
That's right. That's right. In Harvard Yard. I can't do the Boston accent. I can't do it that well. I would never get cast in a Ben Affleck movie. Thank you, Mike. Okay, Emily Block, how about this? Homeowners are making out like bandits, but at the same time, it's tough for renters out there. There are winners and losers happening.
I really liked your accent, Melissa. But no, it's a tricky time. It's really, you know, strange. And to your point, so many people are able to work remote right now, but we don't know if that's going to stick everywhere. Some companies have you know, committed to being remote friendly forever, that this was a proof of concept during the pandemic and that it's doable. But we don't know that everyone is willing to make that move or that pitch. So it's a very strange time, and it's definitely difficult for renters. We're seeing prices soar. I mean, I even from personal experience, you know, my partner and I were paying about double, maybe a little more than double in rent than we were 2 years ago. Mm. So it's just everywhere you're looking, it's soaring.
Yeah. You know, Bob Longo, I think the long-term effects of this pandemic, we're living through these incredible changes right now, and it's hard to predict how it will all shake out, but the way we live and work has fundamentally changed.
Yeah, fundamentally. And it's interesting because a lot of people are working from home, and you know, you're in a cramped space, you're in an apartment, your rent's going up. You know, you didn't get a raise because the pandemic put a crunch on your business. You're lucky to have a job. Home prices are going up. And so, I mean, there's a lot of things that are kind of threatening, quote unquote, the American dream, right? Like everybody wants to own a house, but holy cow, everyone seems to want to sell a house right now. Mm-hmm. You know, I know a guy that bought a house out toward the beach, and not a huge house, not a ritzy house in a nice little neighborhood. 3 years ago, it's doubled in price, and he wouldn't be able to afford that house now, right? So, I mean, the last year has fundamentally, as you said, changed everything.
Yeah.
And I think we have to be prepared to, you know, to embrace new things and, you know, hybrid things. And, you know, maybe my job is working from home a couple of days a week, working from an office a couple of days a week. That office is a smaller place than it used to be because people are sharing space in there on different days, right? I think that, you know, we'll be pushed again to have a lot of two income families just to make ends meet, not to buy a house, but to pay for rent. So, I mean, there are definite inflationary cycles at play here right now that are kind of disturbing, that haven't been flushed out yet.
Absolutely. Okay, one more story to touch on. Today is the last day to vote for new names for Lee, Andrew Jackson, and Jean Ribault High Schools and Jean Ribault Middle School. 9 schools are being considered for renaming for either Confederate ties or marginalization of Native Americans. And Shelton Hall, this voting is open to stakeholders, students, faculty and staff, alumni, community members, and such. So by later this summer, we should know the results.
Yeah, and the result should be pretty interesting. You know, I suggested early on that we change the name of Robert E. Lee High School to Lynyrd Skynyrd High School in honor of the guy that Lynyrd Skynyrd was named after. Yeah, it seemed like a nice little compromise. Real quick, wanted to give a shout out to Boston Mike, who just called, a Marine Corps veteran, Gulf War veteran, came down here about a decade or so ago from Boston, sold his house, bought low in Mandarin, started a family. Now he sold high, now he's going back up there to his family. That's what Jacksonville does very well. As far as the school names, you know, it's up to the students. This whole thing where we're not allowed to name schools after people because of it's so politically controversial, I think it's unfortunate. I think that these should be opportunities to honor some of the legends of our community. But I think that ultimately, once the votes are all tallied, all the Confederate names on these schools will be gone by the end of the year and replaced with something nice and vague that won't offend anybody.
I think that's a safe bet. And I want to thank all four of you for joining us. A great discussion. Thank you, Shelton Hull, Emily Block, Bob Longo, and John Burr. Thanks for being here with us, and have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone. Okay, a quick break, and in a moment, a look ahead to live music coming back to the area. We'll get a preview of the sweet sounds of the Southern Drifter Music Festival. If you like Jekyll Island, you like country music, you want to mark your calendar for this. We're going to tell you about it in just a moment. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Don't go away.
On the next Fresh Air, as we approach Mother's Day, we'll listen back to stories Martin Scorsese, Trevor Noah, and Albert Brooks told on our show about their mothers. I hope you'll join us.
Today at 1 on WJCT News 89.9.
Some states are now reporting no deaths from COVID-19, and weekly unemployment claims have reached their lowest level since the pandemic began. Meanwhile, Republicans move to evict one of their own, and former Attorney General Bill Barr gets a stinging rebuke from the bench. We'll get to all of it on the Friday News Roundup, next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, live music is coming back to the area, and a big festival in South Georgia is one you won't want to miss. I got a preview from Alan Verlander, CEO of Airstream Ventures, on the new Southern Drifter Music Festival. It's coming up later this month on Jekyll Island. Hi, Alan. Good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Melissa.
I can't wait to hear about this festival coming up on Jekyll Island. Tell us about the Southern Drifter Music Fest.
Yeah, well, we wanted to, at Airstream Ventures, we wanted to create kind of our own festival. And it's a different festival. It's not like this where you got 40,000 people coming and all that. It's really a chilled environment inspired by, there's a place in Nashville called The Listening Room. And people come and you hear these great musicians. It's a kind of a laid-back environment. All these musicians have written number one hits for Garth Brooks or Luke Bryan or Carrie Underwood and all this. You've heard of them, but you never heard of the writers. And so they're very talented in and of itself. And so we're bringing them down to Jekyll Island from Nashville and kind of bringing a little taste of Nashville, if you like country music, to Jekyll Island, to the Westin Hotel there, and creating just a fun music kind of destination festival.
Who's on the bill? Who's going to be performing?
So we've got a lot of we're going to do it from the standpoint of Friday night and Saturday night. We're going to have headliners that people have heard of if you're a country music fan. So on Friday night, we have a headlining group called Love and Theft. They've written a couple of number one hits and have their own number one hits on the country charts. And then on Saturday night, we've got a group called Thompson Square. Thompson Square, a lot of people have heard of. They've had several number one hits, multi-platinum, all those kinds of things, vocal duo of the year by the ACMs and CMA Awards. So they're a group that everybody has heard of. So they'll be headlining Saturday night. And then we've got several other songwriters, Leslie Thatcher, Alex Sayer, John Caldwell, Corey Batten. All of these songwriters are very talented musicians as well, and have, as I mentioned earlier, have written songs for number one hits for Garth Brooks. He's had a few successful hits out there, and some of our writers have written those for Dierks Bentley, for Little Big Town. So all of these big groups that you've heard of, some of these people have written a lot of their songs. So they'll also sing those as well, and it should be just a fun environment. If you like country music, you like just a chilled environment, you like the ocean, you like some maybe adult beverages, and just to meet new people, this is probably the festival for you.
And you're billing it as a vacation getaway. Who doesn't love the beauty of Jekyll Island? And the Westin is a great place to stay. You've got some yoga flows on the beach and some other things happening, all socially distanced, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it will all be very COVID-friendly. We've been working very directly with Jekyll Island and the Westin to create a very safe environment. But you're right. I mean, you come on Friday, you hear music on Saturday, you enjoy the island. So bike rides or yoga on the beach, or they have golf courses. And we want people to experience the island, but then come back, and at 2 o'clock, the music begins. But you're also going to have music in the lobby. You're going to have music at all the different bars and restaurants there. So you're going to hear great music, but you can, you know, bring your significant other or your spouse or just a friend if you want to just go and, you know, have a relaxing time. We've missed live music, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
You missed it. I've missed it. We've all missed it. And so this is a live music event, but you're sitting in a lawn chair. It's a chilled environment. Our hotel rooms that overlook the area where the stage will be and also overlook the ocean will serve as kind of a individual suite. So we're encouraging people to stay in their own rooms, come on the balcony, listen to the music to be COVID friendly. And so with all of the packages that we're selling, it's all inclusive. So you pay one price and you get your hotel room, you get tickets to the festival, you get all your drinks included and all your food included. So it's a one-stop shop to just come and enjoy a great weekend.
Well, everyone needs to book it now. Go to SouthernDrifterFestival.com. Book your tickets for the inaugural Southern Drifter Music Festival coming up May 21st through the 23rd on beautiful Jekyll Island. And it won't be the last of its kind. I know you have a lot planned with this, Alan. And kudos to you, Alan Verlander, CEO at Airstream Ventures, for putting this all together. It's going to be a beautiful weekend.
It's going to be a lot of fun, and we're really excited about creating this vision. I think you've seen music festivals that are kind of going this way now, and you know, we want to be a part of that industry as well, and would love to do one in Jacksonville as well. But Jekyll sets up perfectly for this first one, and we'll learn a lot and bring some great musicians in play, and hopefully have a sold out crowd and be able to do this for a long time. So I appreciate all your support in it and getting the word out for us.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening. And thanks to all of our guests and callers, along with producer Heather Schatz, director Josh Torres, news director Jessica Palumbo, and digital editor Bill Bortsfield. And you, a community of listeners. Keep your feedback coming. Emails go to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. If you missed any part of the show, the podcast will be up later today, or listen through the WJCT app. And be sure to join us at noon for the Florida Roundup, our statewide live call-in show where we round up the biggest stories across the Sunshine State from the week. It'll include a new interview with former Governor Charlie Crist. He's thrown his hat in the ring to run for governor. What's motivating his campaign? That and a lot more coming up at noon on the Florida Roundup. I'm Melissa Ross. Have a great Friday, everyone. We'll see you soon.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.